Hey, welcome to the Meat House. Jeff here.
And Chris here. Well, it got cold.
It got real cold.
It got cold.
And it's not like earlier in the winter where it was like, oh, it's cold for a couple days, and then it's like warmer for a couple days, and then it gets cold again. It's just, it's cold.
It's cold. And it stayed cold. It got a lot of, and I know you hear this in the Midwest a lot. It's not the heat. It's made in the winter. It's not the temperature cold. It's the wind.
No,
we have a lot of it.
Yeah, no, it's still kicking and going, and it's not doing anything to get rid of the snow we got over the weekend is it?
And plus, you know, it got cold so fast that trees actually froze internally and exploded.
I saw that.
Oh my gosh,
videos. It's crazy.
I didn't know that was a thing until but unbelievable.
Yeah. So for those of you listening at home, we're in a little bit different location this week because of all this cold and all the wind and all the crap. Our usual studio is in my garage.
It's just too cold. It's just, even now, it's just too cold.
It's like 55 in there, which is not cool at all. It's not fun for, you know, human habitation. With as ungodly cold and nasty as it is outside, I've got my chickens in a little pen down there to keep them from freezing.
It's that cold.
Yeah, I've got enough frozen chicken in the freezer. I don't need five more.
No kidding. And the fact is, I don't want to compete with five chickens for airtime.
No, and they've been in there since the snow hit, was it Friday or Saturday?
Yeah.
So by now, they are cranky.
It was bad.
No, you have that saying, chickens are soft. Now chickens are just pissed.
Yeah, I'm not willing to challenge their pissed offness. All right. Well, welcome to the Meat House, and we'd like to thank each and every one of you for listening to us every week. Our listeners are why we do this.
Absolutely. You guys tune in week after week. I get to see those numbers climbing little by little. That means you're tuning in consistently. You're sharing us to your friends. You're, engaging with us on social media and sending us emails. That's super cool.
Yeah, you're sharing the love, and we appreciate it. We feel the love. But, we're mailing out the winning prizes now.
Yes.
Got everybody's name in.
It took a little while to get all of our, the addresses for our contest winners, and then all this crap hit, and I've not really been wanting to leave the house.
Me either. I've been hiding in my hole, too. But, getting here today was, the streets are clear.
They are.
But I ain't happy.
No. My wife still leaves the house for work, unfortunately, and she's been consistently impressed with, the streets are fine. As of, like, Sunday evening, I think,
we
went and checked, and yeah, everything was good. Just, no, it's really cold and crappy out, and I want to stay home where there's, like, you know, tea and coffee and blankets.
And heat.
But yeah, no, sorry for the delay. I know there's gonna be delays.
Life is life, man.
Be getting those packages soon. But hope you guys enjoy.
We're happy to send them to you guys. I'm really happy you guys tuned in and asked for these things. All right, the other one we need to thank is Box and Barlicle.
Of course. They have been sponsoring us. This is the second year running now. They are putting up the money to keep us on, you can't really say on the air, but on the internet, we're getting hosted.
On service.
Yeah.
On service.
Keeping not only the episodes we've been doing for the last year, but all the legacy episodes we have from the previous iterations of the show up on our website. So you can find those, you can search those, you can listen to your heart's content. And it's fantastic working with them.
Yeah. And they got all that. And if you ever consider doing any kind of fermentation process, you want your cheese, yogurt, kombucha, beer, mead, wine.
Yeah, across the board.
Yeah, they are there. They've got everything you need. They got the knowledge you need. They got the supplies you need, all in one really good spot with a lot of passion, enthusiasm. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And hey, you can also save 10% using our code.
MHP10. Yeah, MHP10.
I on the spotted you today.
And oh, you got me. I clutched. But I got it right.
That's right. MHP10 gets you 10% off. Their prices are already competitive because, who they're competing with.
Yeah.
So that saves you a little money. That gives us a little recognition to say, hey, this is worth their time to give us the promotion and help us out. So everybody wins there, guys.
Yeah, it's awesome. Now, our code MHP10 is actually for your online orders. If you happen to be in the area and you ask for it there, There will be guys, you might just get it. You know, give it a try.
Doesn't hurt to ask. I should really ask Jake next time I'm in there to see if that works. But
you know, last two time I was there, he just gave it to me.
Yeah. I mean, no. I have a feeling he's kind of treating you like me. It's like, oh yeah, it's Jeff. He's getting the discount.
Yeah.
But
so yeah, and I appreciate it because you know, he even calls me like, hey, I got this in you. No, okay, I'm on my way. Yeah, just when I need more reasons to go get more stuff.
No, he doesn't call me on that, but he does like anytime I walk in, oh hey Jeff, I got this new, I got that new. More things to spend my money on.
Well, you know, I'm 10 minutes away from him.
Yes.
You know, you're like 30.
20, 30, yes. Yes. Yeah. It's a little bit more of a hike.
So, but you know, so he knows if he says, hey, I'm closing an hour, but I just got these in a little bit ago, I'm going to be there. I'm going to go. Anyway, but thank you, Box of Barley Corp, for continuing the support with this show.
Absolutely.
And the service you provide. Now, meat of the day, cherry blossom green tea from Sap House.
Yeah, this one I've had for a little while. I forget exactly how long, but this is a 12%er. It's one of their experimental batches. And the cherry blossom and the green tea, I was looking at this as we were kind of, you know, talking about getting ready for the show, and like, you know, I could use some spring
today. Yeah, spring would be nice right now.
Cherry blossoms and green tea, that just sounded like a spring combo that was right up my alley. So let's pour this out.
And I will tell you, I like everyone else, oh man, we haven't had snow. We haven't had anything like this until we got it, and then it came in spades. And
I mean, it always feels like the the weather's like a month later than we're expecting it
to
be, you know?
Like, and I don't know why, but
no.
We had snow on Thanksgiving, but nothing on Christmas. And now we're most of the way through January and we get a blizzard.
Right. Yeah. So, no. The closest we had to a white Christmas on Christmas was all that crazy, weird fog.
Yeah, that was.
Anyway, let's take a look at this guy. That's a medium amber to a light amber.
I call it a little bit lighter than medium, but it's also a little bit hazy.
Yeah, it's got a little haze to it. I don't know if that's a cold haze kind of a thing, or if it's a
cold haze
kind of thing, or if that's how it's bottled.
And if anyone who doesn't know what cold haze is, if in mead there's enough sugar in there, if it gets cold enough, it's going to get hazy looking because it's just it's making things more dense, and you get a haze. It's called cold haze. A lot of honey on that smell.
Oh yeah, the honey is really strong on this. And I don't know if there's a little bit of the cherry blossom playing in there. I'm not sure what a cherry blossom tastes like. I know kind of.
I'm not really sure what one smells like. So
yeah, it's a light smell. Yeah. I remember that. And it's, you know, they had that that study a while back about the smell of violets, how like your brain kind of forgets it. And so every time you're smelling violets, somehow you're.
It's like the first time.
Selling it. Yeah, you're smelling it for the first time. Like. There's a lot of smells that I'm not sure I
remember. Yeah, this is one of them. Now, I'm tasting it.
But yeah, it definitely smells like honey more than anything else.
Yeah, I tasted it while Jeff was on that. And it's got a strong bite in the middle of the tongue. Mm-hmm. Back front middle of the tongue. Not unpleasant, mind you, but it's strong.
Yeah. It has. This is not a heavy mead by any stretch.
No.
But it has a decent amount of acidity and some tannin character to it, too, which I got to think that's the tea, right?
Yeah, it's got to be the tea. But but the tannin is, it's not wine tannin either.
No.
It doesn't have the same bite as wine tannin.
It's a little softer and almost a little, like, I don't want to say, like, less harsh, but it's a different character. It's kind of a rounder.
Rounder. I'll take rounder.
Yeah, yeah.
I couldn't find the word either. But not bad, actually. I wish I knew what that secondary smell you can almost smell in this is. Mm-hmm. I can't play it. I'm assuming it's cherry blossom. But
I got to assume the same. I'm, you know, again, can't really put my finger on it to say, oh, yeah, no, I, you know, went through and walked through the cherry blossoms and blah, blah, blah. No, I
can't. That's never happened with me.
But this is nice. I'm enjoying this.
And I'm glad to be having a little bit of spring meat here. All right. Now, I was talking to Jeff a little while back, and I mentioned we have not gone through checking equipment, equipment maintenance, so what to look out for. Now, I broke it up in three parts. I mean, the base thing that most beginners get is a glass jug of some variety with the stopper and all that, and the airlock. So I thought we'd go through the glass, plastic buckets, barrels, and then into the stainless steel, like your
My fermenter, yeah.
Yeah, your fermenter, where you make your beer, and we tell what you should look for, what you have, to make sure you are giving yourself the best possibility to win out.
And I think there's a fourth category that we need to add to this, though.
Okay.
And it's, you could kind of buttress it with plastic, but consumables. Your tubing, the little rubber grommets for your, you know, whether you're using a glass bucket, or I'm sorry, a glass carboy, or a bucket with a little, like, O-ring.
O-ring, yeah.
None of those are, like... Nothing in this hobby is permanent. Even my stainless steel fermenter will, like, corrode and rust.
Yeah.
It's a question of how long you're going to make it last. And so a lot of these things, like the tubing, like the grommets, the stuff like that, these are short-term investments. And so I think, like, let's call those consumables, if nothing else.
If for nothing other than, And it's not just the, like John, it's not just the containers, but I also want to keep you to keep in mind, you are fighting other bacterias and molds and spores and all the other things to make your mead. Keeping maintenance on all these parts is what's going to give you the edge. and it's very important. Starting with glass.
Mm-hmm. Nothing in this life is permanent, but glass is pretty...
It's about as close we're going to get.
I think so. I mean, it's as long as it's in solid shape, it's fairly inert. I mean, it doesn't... It's really hard to stain. It's really hard to penetrate. It's really hard to do anything that's going to, like, flaw it. Mm-hmm. The worst you're going to have to worry about generally is, like, chips and scratches.
Chips, scratches, and cracks.
Yeah.
Chips. Okay, first of all, an irregular chip anywhere around the opening of it, you have a possible air leak situation there.
Mm-hmm. And it, just personal safety, it's somewhere you could cut yourself.
Stuff. If it's cracked or scratched inside, it's no longer your friend.
Probably not. Especially because if you think about carboys, they have the narrow opening and the wide body.
Yeah.
It's just that much harder to get a cleaning instrument in there to get a scratch clean.
Yeah.
Well clean. And I think, you know, when we're talking about maintenance, we need to reiterate again, especially in homebrewing, there is a difference between clean and sanitized.
Exactly. And
you have to clean before you can effectively sanitize, because anything, though, whether we're talking about glass, whether we're talking about plastic, those scratches can be home to biofilms. And if you don't have the biofilm cleaned out of that, you're giving a safe harbor for bacteria, mold, any kind of those microbiological pests.
And it gets worse in plastic. We'll get there in a minute.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But if there's a scratch in there that you cannot clean, the odds of you winning this fight are slim.
Right.
Because if you cannot get to where the scratches, or God forbid, a crack is, you know, crack is, if you, once it gets enough pressure in the crack, it's going to break it. Either way, you just lost your investment right there.
Right. Yeah. That's just bound for the glass recycling right then and there.
Yeah. And just let it go. I mean, I was fortunate enough that when I was at Bacchus a while back, they had a antique carboy. It's pear-shaped.
Mm-hmm.
And I said... And I'm thinking, my wife's in the car. She's going to kill me. I'm taking that. And I got it. So I think the first one I'm going to make of that one is I'm going to make my London Fog in it.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just because there's no, I can make any meat I want in that thing.
Mm-hmm.
But this gorgeous pear-shaped carboy, it's like 6 gallons.
Yeah.
And I'm going to make a Earl Grey with lactose and make a London Fog mead and see what I can get there.
That'll be fun. That'll be nice.
But I'm sitting here going, I need some, for my first round of this one, I need something classic. So that was my goal there. But if any chips, scratches, or if the scratch is on the outside, nobody cares.
Right. Yeah. It's
it's on the outside. It's not where you're fermenting. If it's on the inside, think hard for glass. And me personally, I'd rather cry a little bit and throw away a carboy than cry a lot and throw away 6, 5, 6, 7 gallons of meat.
And have to clean up a broken carboy.
And have to clean up a broken carboy. So pick your level of pain you want, guys. Yeah,
there's a reason you own all of my old glassware these days. Is because am I still as strong as I've ever been? Pretty close. I mean, I think I'm doing okay.
Yeah.
Is it a pain in the ass to clean those? A little bit. We've got tools for that.
Yeah.
Is it a case where I've seen so many people drop a carboy and go, oh, that's, the injury has been caused to them through this process that I don't want to risk myself because I know I am kind of clumsy and prone to that.
And so, when you gave it to me, I had two good legs to one bum leg. Right. So, you know, I'm less carboy friendly than I was. But I still have them. I'm still going to use them. But I also have a spot. They don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
I have a spot. The most I'm going to do is grab my harness, put it on a table or something high to work to do the racking.
Right. And, you know, if we should maybe consider at some point getting like a little pump or something that transfers instead of having to.
And they exist. And yes. They have those for wine.
They do. They totally do. Any wine pump is good for a meat pump.
Yeah.
Flat out. Anyway, so that's glass. And I think glass is probably the easiest one to talk about because it's kind of a pass go, really.
Yeah. It's either good for you or it's not. You know, be safe, be kind to your glass. If it breaks or cracks or anything, it's no longer your friend. Let it go. Plastic is a little more temperamental.
There's a little bit of wiggle room in plastic, I think.
Dropping a plastic bucket of any size won't necessarily damage it.
No.
Comma, if you scratch the inside, plastic is, you'll scratch it and there'll be plastic folding around part of the scratch.
Right.
Now, that is where you get your biofilms, your bacteria is. Before I use any of my buckets, every time I take a piece, I take one of my filter bags, my muslin filter bags, and I'll run it around the inside every square millimeter of that bucket. If it catches anywhere, the chances are really high I'm not going to use that bucket ever again for anything for my mead making.
Well, and I've talked about this before. Like, my buckets, I go through, like, a phase. Mm-hmm. So, a new bucket, I'll use that for fermenting, blah, 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 blah. Once I've got some scratches or something in it and it's some time to demote that, that bucket goes into my cleaning phase. And I'll use that for, like, PBW to, like, rinse bottles or just, like, clean and handle stuff. But it never gets fermented in it. It's nothing that's going to promote, like, bacterial growth and crap like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there is that.
And then after that, it's a storage place for tools.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's active crack hole, whatever in it. This is where I'm putting my tools for the stuff I use for sanitation and fermenting to hold on to them so it's in one spot.
Right. Or maybe this is the bucket that I stick under the sink if I've got to do some plumbing work, or I throw some sticks in if I got to get wood from the backyard for the fireplace, you know?
Yeah.
It's the general purpose stuff.
Yeah. It's the catch-all pail. With buckets, there's one thing that I've noticed, and you have a lid with a gasket inside. A big rubber gasket, and I've had lids crack just from opening and closing.
Yep.
And one of them cracked when I was in the middle of a batch. Now, from what I could tell, it did not crack enough to break the seal.
But a crack is a crack.
The crack is a crack, and you have to make sure there's no cracks in the lid. And this is where we should be a good segue going into the other pieces, parts of what we use for these.
Right. Things. Consumables are worth mentioning here because, like you said, a lot of these, the plastic buckets we're talking about, they have a thicker rubber grommet on the inside where the lip of the bucket itself, like, matches and makes that that airtight gap. And then there's the smaller rubber grommet where your airlock sits into. And both of those are rubber.
And they will degrade.
Right.
Especially naturally. With alcohol.
Well, and not only that, but one thing that if we were making beer, it would be less of a problem. We are making wine, specifically mead, which is a highly acidic form of wine by its nature. Because, once you get rid of the sugar in honey, there's actually a lot of acid in there.
Yeah.
And the acid will eat up the rubber, the silicone, the different, like, soft, what do I want to say, manufactured materials.
That the feels.
You're right. So not only do you need to look out for your grommets and your stuff like that, but the if you have the kind of buckets with the little spigot at the bottom to make transfers easier, you got to check the grommets on either side of that spigot too to make sure that's not degrading. Because I have heard horror stories about people they left for an event or went to work and suddenly their 5-gallon fermenter became an empty fermenter.
And there was a mess on the floor.
And apparently, like, some of the floor joists, they never got the staining out of.
Oof. I didn't hear about that, but yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, all your grommets, all your seals are on bucket, are highly important. Now, on other consumables, you have the tubing you use for transfer. And things like that.
Right. And, you know, to an extent, some of the tools we use go in there too. Like your stir rod or whatever, even if you're using one of the drill mounted ones, generally those are plastic, maybe with a metal core, maybe not. The one I have is a stainless steel rod with little plastic fins. The plastic in those is consumable. The steel rod is a lot more durable.
But steel rod, but if you get something that's steel, you also have, you know, the plastic bucket is not a friend of steel.
Right.
If you're not careful, you can scratch your own bucket with your stirrer.
Absolutely.
You know, so, these are things you got. We all, you know, Jeff and I always try to keep in mind, simply because we, every time we make a batch, it's an investment, and we want the return.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a level of cognizance in just being thorough and being responsible with your work, so that you're trying to leave as little to chance as possible here, man. Mm-hmm. You want, we're putting money, we're putting thought, we're putting effort, we're putting just good vibes and positive feelings and some time from our busy days into making this batch for, you know, us and our friends to enjoy. We want it to come out the way we want it, and not like, you know, the lactobacillus farm that it could be if we're not careful.
This is the, okay. What we do is a science. However, I don't want it to be a science experiment. I want it to be the science I want.
Right.
All right. So you have your tubing. And we have, Bacchus has silicone tubing.
They have silicone, and they have the, I guess it's clear nylon, I think.
And,
you know, you can get the same kind of stuff if you go to, like, you know, your local home store and get the tubing you would use to connect a, like the water line on a refrigerator for the ice machine or whatever. But, you know, the Bacchus knows the size you need for the tools you're using. So
the size they have is the size you need. So, you know, get it from where you get your tools, if nothing else.
It's not that much more expensive, and you know it's food grade. The stuff at, you know, Home Depot or Lowe's or wherever the hell you're going, you know,
it's probably food grade.
It's, because it's going into a refrigerator hookup,
but you know, and I actually have a 4.5 foot tubing. I can't get that in refrigerator tubing unless really, really lucky.
Well, and a couple of times I've found, like, somebody had a flash sale. One of the homebrew stores online had like a 50 foot coil of that tubing stuff for something like $20-$25.
Ooh.
Like, I'm not going to need that much for quite a while.
Yeah.
But I'm always replacing this stuff. I'm replacing, you know, my 4 to 5 foot line once or twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
So stick it in the closet and I'm good for several years, right?
Yeah. But still, you know, okay, there's storage. And
it takes up space. It's more clutter. Yes, it's a pain in the butt. And
but I got what I need. Yeah, and it's the right size. Another consumables you may not consider is the siphon.
Yeah, your auto siphon, especially if you're, you know, your plastic siphon, your airlock also.
Your airlocks.
I would count in there too, because
airlocks are shockingly fragile.
They are shockingly fragile. They will get gunky looking. Even the plastic starts to cloud up and look a little sus. It's just as prone to scratching as anything else plastic you're using. And
is it actively in the what you're making? No, not really, unless you something unfortunate happens, comma. Are you risking it?
The one that I tend to be the most fastidious about replacing, those little like white or tan drilled grommets that you stick the airlock into for a carboy. Or the little port in my stainless steel guy, like those start to look a little discolored, and I'm like, no, that is the closest thing to mead, and I just like, no, I don't want to chance that.
No, you know, and you know those little grommets we have on the top of our buckets, I think they're like reddish. Or
they're either red or black, depending on like who made it, and
I got the red ones,
right?
And they're cheap. I mean, I got a package of 25.
Mm-hmm.
And they are a pain to replace. It takes effort to put, you know, getting one out's easy. Putting the new one in, a little more effort.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a brand new one. I know the seal's good, and off I go. Bob's your uncle.
Right, yeah. And it's, for a lot of these guys, it's just a quick, literal eyeball exam. Just, okay, how does this hose look? Is it cloudy? Does it have staining in it? Is that a big deal? Yes, no, pass, fail. Yeah. How does this airlock look? Does it have cracks in it? Well, time to replace it.
Yeah.
Nothing of this is hard.
Nothing of this is hard. It's just time consuming. And even your brushes that you use to clean out in your tubes and your buckets, they're not, the brush is nylon. The rods are generally aluminum.
Right.
And both of those, and if I'm shoving a nylon brush down the length of my transfer tubing, hoping I don't push it too hard on, I can't get it back because that happened one time almost. But, you have to make sure the inside's clean just like the outside.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a time I thought you just sanitize it, it's fine because nothing gets in there. No, what you're transferring is acid. Mm-hmm. It's acid heavy. Even silicone can be, over time, compromised.
Yeah. Silicone is easier to compromise by acids than like the rubber in the grommets, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong on this.
I'm not sure which way it goes. Doesn't matter. If I see something wrong.
Yeah. I'm not a chemical engineer. I'm not a material scientist. This is just what I've heard and what I've experienced. I think pure silicone is a little more like, what I want to say, susceptible to that a standpoint. So,
when you're cleaning and clean, then sanitize, you have to get the inside and outside of these things as well. Mm-hmm. Now that Jeff mentioned, we're probably going to get a pump in the fairly near future because it's coming to that point where we're starting to make more meat for the coming year and up production a little bit here. Make sure your pumps are doing what you want to do. Make sure they're thoroughly cleaned out. Make sure they're sanitized properly. Make sure the screws you use to hold your filters in place are firm and not stripped.
Well, and this is another thing. Like, if you have any spot where there are, like, screws or threaded inserts that are potentially in contact with your product, check the threads, too.
Yeah.
It's the same, like, potential vector as for a biofilm as, a scratch.
Yeah, because it is a groove, it's a scratch.
Right, and like I was saying, my stir thing it's just two little plastic fins on a little threaded screw with a little machine nut holding it in place. You got to just take that apart once in a while, make sure it's all really thoroughly scrubbed, and then put it back together, even if you're not replacing those fins.
And also, it's not hard. You can get the little tiny and move on.
Right.
But, a little due diligence can make the difference between, oh, this is going to be fantastic, to I'm pouring this down the sink because I'm sad.
Now, before we get into stainless steel, which is a longer-term investment, and I think as long as you're being smart about it, a good investment for trying to save time and effort, let's talk about cleaning versus sterilizing. And specifically, what are you using for cleaning?
I use a very mild soap and my brushes.
Okay.
And I also use a sponge. Not the abrasive.
Not the scouring pad.
Not the scouring pad. A sponge.
Good, good.
And go through all the buckets and make sure.
And when you're saying soap, I'm assuming you mean like dish soap.
Dish soap, yeah. I mean, all I need is something that's going to take out all the bacteria that I want to take out of there. And most soaps will do that. Mm-hmm. It's not a big deal. I mean, I have several types of dish soap at home. I'll just pick one.
Right.
And it depends, do I want to smell the tropical stuff, the apple stuff, or the lemon stuff? That's the only real question I have. But sanitize, and I use Star Sand.
Right.
And straight up.
Star Sand is just so easy to use. It's effective, and it lasts for like 3 months to a year.
Yeah.
Kind of just depends on how frequently you're using it, how well you're storing it. So it's... I mean, as close to foolproof as we get in this hobby.
Yeah.
For the most part.
And, I don't just use Star Sand in my meat making. I have bottled water at home, and I'll clean out the bottles when I'm finished, and I'll throw Star Sand in there, swish it around, let it drain out, dry, and cap it for the next time when I refill.
Yeah.
Because, yes, the water I put in there was sanitary. In between then and now, and using it all up, maybe, maybe not.
Right.
So I don't take the chance. But... not scrubber, nothing abrasive in any way, shape, or form goes inside my buckets or containers.
Right.
It's just, I will use the absorbent cloth. Yeah. I have a beater that is like a car wash spinning thing.
Yeah.
Put it on my drill, put it inside, and I'll clean it out, but it's soft cloth.
Right. Yeah. I think I had one of those at one point too, and I think I finally just beat the hell out of it.
Yeah, time to replace it.
I will use a sponge and dish soap for a lot of my big cleaning stuff. And the other thing that I like as far as a cleaning tool, PBW, the powdered brewery wash.
Okay.
It is really good because it effectively attacks organics. So those biofilms and stuff like that, it chews them up real nicely.
Okay.
And if you've ever if you ever had friends over for an outdoor gathering and they left a bottle next to the chair outside and you came back to it a week later and, oh man, who left this out here? You look and there's that the dead flies and the mold pocket from the last little drops of water at the bottom, that the half backwash, half alcohol. It gets those out real
quick. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I've got that. I've never used it for that, though, because I didn't know what to use it for, to be blunt.
Right. It is your cleaning step. So okay. If you're needing cleaning done, and when we talk about stainless steel, we will talk more about this, because I think stainless steel is where it can really shine. The brewery wash part of this is that it is developed specifically for, the clean-in-place steps of maintaining a brewery in mind. Stainless steel is a bigger investment generally, and it tends to last longer. You and I got started as friends in a sword fighting group.
Yes.
You know a thing or two about steel.
A little bit.
What's the difference between steel and stainless steel?
Carbon content, mostly.
Kind of.
But what I know about steel in this context is stainless steel is more brittle.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't rust, per se.
Per se.
Per se.
That's important.
But it's more rigid, and it can absorb some odors, but it can't really, but you have to work a little bit hard to clean it.
Right. So the difference.
It does stain.
The main difference between so-called stainless steel and regular steel is, in a sense, carbon content, in that, steel has carbon in it.
Mm-hmm.
Often we're talking about a fraction of a percent.
Yeah.
But it's still got carbon in it. Versus stainless steel, the extra thing in there is not necessarily or even generally carbon. It's chromium. And chromium is what gives us the lack of rust and corrosion and crap like that that can affect steel otherwise. And one of the cool things about stainless steel, one of the things that makes it effective is that when it is clean and exposed to oxygen, you get a thin layer of what's called chromium oxide on it. And that is the protective layer,
okay.
Right? A lot of manufacturers encourage that by the way that they get that to work, the way that they get that to form, is by a high temperature dip in an acidic solution.
Okay.
And a lot of them will just have a big vat of 150, 160 nitric acid that they'll dip it into as a finishing step, let it drain, and then, it air dries, the oxygen contacts the chromium, and boom, Bob's your uncle, nice layer of chromium oxide protective. It's called passivation.
Okay.
Passivation.
Passivation.
Or passivation.
Hadn't heard these terms, term before, but okay. But
it might be passivization.
Of the two of us, you're alone with stainless steel, anything like that.
True. So, well, tools as well.
Yeah.
Same rules apply. The cool thing about this is that it is basically corrosion resistant, rust proof, and it is fairly long lasting, even in a high acid environment, because, it takes acid to form this, right? Some of the problems here is that you can't necessarily assume that your stainless steel fermenter is passivated already when you buy it. For one, there's probably oils or other products from the manufacturing process, if you're getting it new, that are included in that. Just because it came out of a factory somewhere, or at least somebody's workshop. For two, if you think about it, a lot of the not necessarily made in America brand name products we could be buying, if we go to AliExpress and just buy a stainless steel fermenter, not only do you want to check the welds, you probably just want to do a solid passivation run across the board there, because, the person that manufactured that stainless steel plate that they made it out of in the first place probably did do a protective thing just to to get it shipped to whatever factory it's going to be made from, but the manufacturer is...
I guarantee they didn't.
They're trying to save every, you know, every cent they can, making it as cheap as they can to, you know, maximize their own profit while still undercutting their competition. So, yeah, if they can save an hour's worth of man hour not doing that step...
With the huge vat of acid.
Right, not to mention not paying for that vat of acid in the floor space that they could be making something else in instead. Yeah, no, it kind of makes sense that they would. So but
there's actually, I mean, I'm talking to Jake at Bacchus. He actually said, if I get one of these, I would need to go to this website. And they will teach you step by step how to go through and pass and do that process to wash it out and make sure it's all shiny, ready to go.
Is it a complicated process? No, I'm going to go through it right now.
Okay, cool.
So generally, when we're talking about cleaning stainless steel, like I said, powder brewery wash, the PBW, great option. The other thing you can use, Barkeeper's Friend.
Okay.
It's a paste.
Yeah, I remember it.
Yeah. Another thing you want to be mindful of, again, with the sponge, don't use the scouring side. Only use the soft sponge side.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to do elbow grease with the soft sponge or a good clean cloth, but get in there and get it. You have to be careful not to scratch.
Yeah. The scrub daddy, the scouring pads, the steel wools, the copper, all the things, bad idea. Don't do it.
Steel wool is doubly bad idea, and I'll get to that in a minute.
Steel and steel.
Right. Yeah, good. First, you do a real thorough job of cleaning it with whether it's the PBW or Barkeeper's Friend or your dish soap, what have you. You want to get rid of all the different oils and the different things like that, just to get a good base level clean. Then you need an acid solution, and you got some options here. You want to take a guess besides the nitric acid that they're using in factories, what we could be using that you probably already have? You're going to kick yourself when I tell you.
Not bleach, is it?
Bleach is not an acid. Bleach is a base.
Okay, I thought so.
Bleach is another one of those things you absolutely don't want to do because that will ruin your passivation too.
Yeah, okay. I was making sure, obviously. See here. Acid. Vinegar?
Vinegar's not strong enough.
Okay.
And unless you're buying like the, you know, kill weeds and insecticide level, like homeo whatever vinegar stuff, in which case sounds nasty.
Okay, make me kick myself. I'm waiting for it.
Star San?
Really?
Star San is an acid-based sanitizer.
Okay.
So you do, basically, here's the trick. If you make it according to the bottle directions, it's a good sanitizer. If you make it 5 times bottle direction strength, it's a passivation liquid.
Okay, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Okay. Take
hot tap water in the 140 to 160 range. Do, you know, 5 times the label direction and let it sit for a half an hour to an hour. Drain it, air dry it. You're good.
Okay.
The other option, another option you most certainly have in this hobby or almost certainly have in this hobby, citric acid.
Okay. I wasn't sure if citric acid would be a good choice there.
Again, we're going to have to make it strong. It's, you know, way more citric acid than you're probably putting into a meat to, you know, finish it out if it needs a little bright zip. But yeah, you can absolutely use citric acid
in this
case too.
And you know, for a gallon of Star San, it's like 5-6 milliliters.
We're doing for a standard gallon, the package directions
just for sanitizer.
Yeah, for sanitizer, it's 6 milliliters.
6 milliliters.
So
yeah.
We'd be doing 30 milliliters for a gallon instead.
Yeah.
So the trick is, you want this to cover anything the liquid can touch. So we're going to make this
a lot more gallons.
Right. Like my fermenter downstairs, even though I rarely ferment more than 6 gallons in it, is a 7 gallon fermenter. So I will take it to the lip and put the lid in it too. Nature of the beast.
Yeah. But, hey, Star said, what do you know? Good stuff. Now,
this passivation step is really protective. It's great. It's also, like we said, something you can screw up. Bleach will rip that sucker off. It will expose the bare steel underneath it. There's a good chance if you're, you know, quick with it, the drying process will allow it to create its own layer, but there's always a chance. Another thing you can do is scrub it off with a, you know, steel wool or the scrubby scour pad if you're really, you know, really.
Put some serious elbow grease into
right,
it.
Right, yeah. Okay. You can get rid of it that way too. And weirdly enough, steel on steel. I don't understand it. the my understanding of this chemistry effect is like, I don't get how it works, and I like to think I'm a pretty intelligent guy that generally like figures how this. It just hasn't been explained to me well enough, but there's this thing called iron affinity, where if you have, like, let's say I have a a steel brew pot or a steel, like, big steel stir spoon that's steel, not stainless steel, but steel, and I decide to store that spoon inside my steel fermenter when I'm, my stainless steel fermenter when I'm not using it, somehow touching the stainless steel long-term to the steel can, like, ruin that chromium oxide layer and get the steel part to where it can be subject to corrosion somehow. I don't understand it, but apparently that's a thing.
Okay.
So they warn you not to steal, like, if you have stainless steel brew pots and steel brew pots or something of that nature, not to, like, stack them for long-term storage between batches.
Okay. Wow.
So
yeah, I'm glad you have this. I knew you had one. You probably had the information. I didn't know what to say about stainless steel.
Right. So. Yeah. But otherwise, you know, it's stainless steel. Other than that passivation step, and again, this does wear off over time, especially in, you know, when we're using it all the time, we're switching batches. So this is the kind of thing you want to repeat every year or two, generally, just for being on the safe side.
Yeah. But by the same time, you still have a lot of gaskets, and you even have a valve at the bottom of it that I've heard those things sometimes, not frequently, rarely,
right,
just have failure.
It's possible. It's still a rubber gasket.
Yeah.
Or, you know, silicon or whatever the hell you're using. So, yes, those are the kind of things you got to check those. Generally, I will take that apart every two or three batches, just make sure that there is no, like, scratches or cuts in the gaskets. It also has, and it's not the kind of thing that's, like, gonna have a major failure point, but it has four little rubber feet. And so I replace those once in a while, too, because just scooting it on the table or the bench or whatever, those will wear out, too.
Yeah.
So.
I hope you understand how much we jump into this thing and want you to be able to have all the information we have.
Yeah. I mean, it has been said, both on a homebrew and a professional level, 90% of brewing is janitorial work, and there is a level of truth to that that is
kind of shocking.
It's not the fun part of this hobby by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, it's the time-consuming part sometimes, and it's the kind of stuff that you just kind of go, okay, well, I mean, this is the sacrifice I make to make sure that every batch is going to turn out hopefully the way I want it.
And as close as I can get to what I want.
If I'm not avoiding any bad surprises, I'm at least minimizing the chances of it.
Yeah.
Best I can.
And you know, and we spent, 45 minutes about talking about to watch out for, how to mitigate these things. Guys, I will spend roughly 25, 30 minutes to get ready for 4 or 5 buckets.
Yeah.
If this is not a long period of time to clean, sanitize, do all these things, make sure everything's good, it doesn't take much work.
Right.
But by goodness sakes, it's worth your time.
And, you know, the stuff that I was classing as, like, consumables, right?
Yeah.
That's stuff I'm checking basically every batch. How long do I actually spend, like, checking over my transfer tube or my gaskets and stuff? I guarantee it's measured in a minute or two, single digit minutes.
Yeah.
If not outright seconds.
This is busy work, but important work, but it's not a lot of work time.
No, it is. It's, I think, a bigger pain in the butt remembering to be this thorough and remembering to do each step than it is to actually do it.
Yeah. So we hope this helped you out. Hopefully we'll have a warmer day next week and we do this again.
Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed.
But, you know, I'm not planning to go out much at, you know, my wife said, you know, you have a doctor's appointment today. And I went out to my doctor's appointment. I'm sitting here, why is it so bright and cold? Why is my face hurt? I'm going to go home. So, but, you know, it's always a pleasure to be here with Jeff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Happy meeting, man.
You too.
Take care, everybody. Bye.